do something a little different this morning. You're actually here on a really special morning, as far as I'm concerned, because you don't have to just listen to me the whole time. You know, here's the truth about gratitude and thankfulness that I believe. One of the things that can make you the most grateful, giving the most thanks to God, is if you spend your life serving God. And if you're out there serving God in some way through the week and you've been serving Him, by the time Sunday comes, you just can't wait to worship Him because you're working alongside God, you're working with God, and it just stirs up in you that heart to understand Him better. And so when you're in His mission and when you're in life with Him and you're doing things with Him, it just makes you want to have gratitude. And so today what we're doing, it's kind of a mixture of things. Like I said, we're tapping a break on the Christmas thing. We're not moving all the way into that this week. We're thinking of gratitude, but we're going to do that by hearing about mission and service. As most of you know, Adeline and Eli spent their summer with Leader Trex doing some mission stuff there, and we're just going to do kind of an interview session with them, and through understanding how God worked in their experience and how you partnered with that because you prayed for them and many of you financially supported them. This is your mission too. That through that experience, we're going to look at how that really helps us to bring gratitude to God at the same time. So I'm real excited to have them with us today as they're going to do the bulk of the sharing. And I'm just going to MC and ask questions. You can pretend I'm Johnny Carson or something like that. I know that's a long time ago, right? But I don't watch the other guys, so... guys, it is awesome to have you up here, not just because you're my kids, that's great, but it would be great if it was anybody in the church that's doing this, and I've got to hear a lot of your stories, and not all of them, though. I mean, I even learned some stuff at 8:30 this morning when we met earlier, but I've got to hear a lot, but your church family hasn't got to, and so I'm so glad that you guys are willing to take the time to share with us. They're wearing their Leader Trex gear. Did you notice that? Adeline's got her Leader Trex hoodie on.
Yes.
Eli's got his Leader Trex hat, which is great, except for I can hardly see your eyes in the shadow of the light. And, but that's okay. So they're out representing already Leader Trex. So tell us a little bit first, guys, about Leader Trex. We've heard about it some before, but maybe not everybody has. What is Leader Trex, and particularly, what's their mission? And particularly when it comes to their summer trips, like you guys have been a part of this summer and last summer. Just give us a summary of what that's about.
Yeah, so Leader Trex is a youth ministry organization, and so they actually do quite a few things. But what we were part of was they run mission trips all across the U.S., and then they have a site in Costa Rica as well. And so I was in Denver, Colorado, and then...
I was in Pawleys Island, South Carolina.
Yes, and so the big thing for Leader Trex is their goal is to build leaders to fulfill the Great Commission. And so that everything that you're doing as... like
What's
with
the
your
Great
leaders,
Commission?
Great question. Thank you for asking. Yes, so the Great Commission is going out and making disciples of all nations to baptize them and teach them so that they can go out and do the same thing. And so that's in Matthew 28. I don't remember the actual verse because I'm terrible at references.
That's okay.
But, yeah, so it's basically telling people about Jesus and helping them to follow Him. And so everything that we do, like throughout a trip with Leader Trex, is to support those two things. It's to help students to see that I can be a leader, and not just leading for the sake of leadership, but leading for the sake of pointing other people to Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of going off of that too, like Leader Trex is very intentional with its students and how we develop them. Like the whole thing is like, as trip leaders, we're speaking into the students, but then the students, at least at my site, got to turn around and run a VBS and speak into other kids. So it's kind of cool getting to see that model of like, we're feeding you, now go feed others. So. Mm.
Well, what are some of the intentional disciples? You said they're intentional discipleship measures. What's that look like?
Yeah, I can go first. So there's a few things. One of them is every morning students are 45 minutes spending time in devotionals. And so at the beginning of the week, we give them a trip book which is basically a journal. And so throughout the like the week, they're going through the first like five chapters of Daniel. And so that's not the prophecy part that's really hard and confusing and doesn't make sense. It's the story about Daniel's life. And so it's walking through Daniel and like just thinking through that. And so there's like three major sections of that. The first section is like a prayer journal. And so that's using the Acts method, which maybe you've heard of. It's like adoration, confession, thanksgiving, and supplication. And then there's also a Bible study section. So you're reading through a chapter of Daniel, and then you're using different Bible study methods, which is super important because a lot of students, a lot of people in general, don't know how to study the Bible. Like, I might read it, but I don't really understand what it means or how this has anything to do with my life. And so it's helping them to read it and understand, this is what this passage is saying. And then also understanding, like, this isn't just, like, these cool ideas about God or these people in the Bible, but this is actually relevant for my life today. And so that's kind of, like, the Bible study section. And then there's a growth journal section as well. And so the focus of that is helping students to think through, okay, like, this is the way that I'm influencing the people around me, and this is the impact that I'm seeing, and these are the ways that I want to impact the people around me. Because leadership is influence. Like, the way that we influence other people, that's a huge aspect of leadership. And so helping students to think through that as well.
So Daniel, that's just this summer.
Yes, yeah. So the summer before that, we went through the book of James, which is a great book. Highly recommend. If you're looking for something to read, read the book of James.
And it's a great one to yeah. read. And so if a student comes back, and you're both doing the same at each site, all the sites do the
yes.
same.
Yes, yeah.
Where are all the sites?
There's like 14 sites. I know there's one in Dayton, Ohio.
Dayton,
one in Atlanta.
Milwaukee, Chicago. Two in South Carolina. There's,
Kansas City.
Yeah, Texas.
Well, there's one in Louisiana.
They canceled that one and replaced it with one in Tennessee, Costa Rica. There's a whole bunch of them.
Yeah. Knoxville's the new site next
yes.
year.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
And so you're doing Daniel this year. So mm-hmm. you guys did Daniel for like 9 weeks in a row. You guys
yes.
did.
Yeah.
So we can really quiz you. You guys know Daniel really well.
Yeah, I think so. Hopefully.
Yeah, that's the really cool thing, because a lot of our students have gone multiple years to Leader Treks trips, and so they shouldn't have I think they had one reoccurrence. I think they did James twice, some of them. I think Jenna did James twice, but usually they're going to get something different each year. But it's the method that you're teaching that's more important
yes.
so that they can do that with any book they read in the
yeah.
Bible when they go back. Yeah. Do you have anything to add to that, Eli?
Oh, I think she nailed it right in the head.
All right. So you guys already said where you served. You were in Pawleys Island, South Carolina. You're in Denver, Colorado. What is what would you say is distinct about your mission sites that you guys were at?
Well, Pawleys Island was like the original Leader Track site. So I kind of okay. think that's kind of distinct about it, is like that's kind of where it all started. In fact, the CEO and founder of Leader Treks used to work at the church that we stay at that site. So that's kind of cool that they're deeply like rooted with Leader Treks. But other than that, I think what's kind of distinct there is just the further you go south, at least from what I've experienced, like there's a little more racism, and like that is really prevalent.
You say racism?
Racism, yeah. Really prevalent in South Carolina. And honestly, I would have told you before I went down that it was probably just kind of like Not true racism, you know, maybe something that was just kind of lingering, but not really like true racism. But then once we got down there, me and my intern, like we really experienced it and saw like, wow, this is a real thing. Like there's actually a divide in the community here. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of
probably like nothing you've experienced before in your life.
Definitely not. Like it's such a real thing there. It's even like in the kids, like we would do a VBS, like you would see it in the kids too. I think I have a picture somewhere in here where you can see like all the kids piled together on this picnic table, and then there's all of our VBS, like all of our teens. And so what kind of happened there is like they were just like protecting each other. There's like 15 kids piled on the picnic table and they would not move.
Yeah. Well, I don't know though, Eli, when I think about Pauley, South Carolina, that's like vacation time, right? So you went on a vacation all summer with all the rich people and all the fun stuff, right? And that's all that you did?
Not quite. That's a misconception. I mean, it's right by the ocean, so I mean, beautiful down there. But like I said, there's like this divide. Literally, it's a highway. So on one side of the highway is all like the wealthy people.
So like the other side of the tracks, kind of mentality.
Basically, yeah, like all the nice big beach houses, old plantation homes as well.
Yeah,
like all that stuff. All the super wealthy people. Like it's I think. Pawleys Island is the oldest seaside resort in America, from what I understand. And so it's all those people, generations and such. And then on the other side of the highway is just, like the poor side and typically, like, African-American side of town.
Yeah.
And they just, they don't really mesh at all.
You explained at 8:30 that side a little bit about the, when you go farther out. And
it's a food desert. Is something
yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, so like the further you go out, the further you're on the other side of the highway, and the further you go, you start to get into a food desert. And the food desert is like any town or whatever, a group of people that's 45 minutes away from like fresh produce. So these are people who don't have access to fresh produce, and they don't have any way to get to it either. So
yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
It's kind of like eating gas station food, like all the time, like that kind of
pretty
Dollar
much.
General yeah. food or, yeah. Wow. How about your site? Tell us what's distinct about where you were at.
So my site was pretty different. So I was in Denver, Colorado, and so I ran something called an urban adventure serve site, and so everything is based on, like, the more of the city, and so it's based on, like, getting into the city with these already established organizations and serving alongside them. And so a lot of what we did was more geared towards, like, the homelessness. So Denver has a very, very high rate of homelessness and drug issues, especially fentanyl. It's called the fentanyl crisis. And so everything is aimed towards that, essentially. And so a lot of what we did was with homelessness, was with that kind of a thing, a lot of low income, because Denver is just a very expensive, or Denver and Colorado in general. Colorado is an expensive state to live in. And so a lot of it is just a lot of, like, low income, and so painting houses and things like that. And then, that was mainly it, actually. So, yeah.
Well, now, so how many people here have heard of tent communities? How many people have been to one? A few people have. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, so in that homelessness, there's these tent cities. They're called tent cities. And so they're just large collections of tents where people are living. And so that is one of the big things that we did, one of the big ways that we served, is walking through these tent cities. So we would take, we worked with an organization called the Denver Dream Center, and so they do a lot with homelessness, and so we worked with their street team, so we took like snacks and waters and socks and whatever else, and went out on the streets and handed out these things, but it wasn't just about handing out something to people, right? Because there's actually a lot of handouts that go around. There's a lot of organizations, but a lot of them are not actually Christian organizations. They're just trying to, like, better society, which is great, because that needs to happen too. But we know as Christians that ultimately people's greatest need is they need the gospel. They need the hope of the gospel. And so what we did is we would bring them snacks and waters and things like that, but then we would actually work to build relationships with the people living in the tents, like actually stopping and talking with them, because recognizing that they're real humans. Because a lot of times what happens is people just, it's discrimination in a different way, is people just pass them by, ignore them, treat them less than human. A lot of people are afraid of them, which, and for some ways there's good reason, but in a large group it's okay. So, yeah, so it's just walking through these tent cities, meeting people, talking with them, and asking if we can pray for them. Because that is a huge way to open the door to share the gospel with someone. It's a good way to open the door for them to share the things that they're walking through and to be able to point them to the hope of Jesus.
Very cool. We're getting into a little more into what you did here in a second. What are some of the states that, so you have a different group of students every week.
Yeah.
What are some of the states represented that came to you, both of where your locations were? Where do people come from?
We had a group from Maryland, a group from Florida, a couple from Indiana, a couple from PA. I know there's several other states. They kind of all start to merge together.
Yes.
But it's nine different youth groups coming from all different places. Or one from Iowa as well. That was kind of a cool one that came.
Yeah, we had Indiana, Idaho, Utah. I said Arizona the first service, but I think it was actually Arkansas, thinking about it now. Washington, Colorado. Yeah. Yeah. Those are the big ones that I can remember off the top of my head.
So, you know, these kids coming in, they're all the same, right? They're all believers, and their leaders are, and, you know, everybody's on the same page?
Not hardly, no. I remember I had one group, my week two group, they're from Indiana. They're, oddly enough, from a United Methodist church, and none of them were Christians. I don't even think the pastor was, like, he at least didn't have an idea of what the gospel really was, because I brought it up in team time, should probably give an example of that. Team time is like a Bible study that we do every night, talking about what they're learning in their Bible reading, and so they didn't know the gospel, and so I try, like, kind of trying to point them to that in team time, and then also, you know, saying, like, you know, the book of Daniel, like, this is God's word, this is true, this happened, and just getting smirks from the adult leaders, and it's like, okay, you know, this is what you believe, but the Bible tells us something very clearly different. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, yours, they were all.
No, definitely not. Our week nine, my last week, they came, and also was a group of just not Christians. I remember we were doing some training for beach evangelism, and their whole thought process was sharing that they need good works to get to heaven, in essence. And so I also kind of tried to share the gospel with the group as a whole a little bit, and got some angry looks from some of the adult leaders. And I was like, oh, so this is just something that they... It's not like they, some of them even necessarily haven't heard it. Like, they don't want to hear it, at least for the adult leaders. But
yeah, so, you know, I'm asking that question kind of tongue-in-cheek, but I want us to understand that even churches across our nation, just because there's a group coming from a church, just because there are leaders coming from a church, doesn't mean that they really understand the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so when I would hear these guys telling me stories about that, I'm like, you mean not even the leaders? And sometimes the leaders thought that it, you know, it's by being a good enough person and things like that that I talked about when we talked about false teachers a few weeks ago. that's prevalent in a lot of churches, and so they experienced that too and got to be able to tell about Jesus to some of these students that weren't going to hear it from their own churches, and that's a pretty powerful thing. So tell us about some of your service projects. You got into it a little bit, Adeline, but some of your service projects, what kind of things did you do? What kind of things did you see? What kind of things did you experience?
Yeah, so, I mean, we worked a lot in the tent cities in downtown Denver, and so you never really knew what you were going to see, honestly. There's just a lot of drug addiction, and so a lot of the people that you're trying to talk to are high. So you can't really carry a conversation with someone that's high. But, like, I remember, for example, there was one lady, and this was my first time on street team, and it just really stuck out to me. But there was one lady who was sitting on a blanket with, like, an umbrella to try and shield herself from the sun because it was pretty hot. And imagine this, right? Living in a tent on concrete in, like, 100-degree weather. Picture that, right? Like, this is people's lives. These are the way that people actually live. Yeah, so this lady was sitting on this blanket, and I noticed, I was trying to talk to her, I think I'd handed her a snack or something, and she had her nails painted, but they were, like, kind of, like, chipped, like, her nail polish was chipping, and she was like, oh, like, you like to paint your nails, and she had this little bottle of nail polish on her blanket, and I was just trying to make a conversation with her, and, I mean, I couldn't, because she was high, but, like, that was one of the craziest things to me that stuck out of, like, that is the most normal thing for a female to want to do, is to paint your nails, right? Is to try and make yourself look presentable. And that's just, like that's just crazy. Like this is a normal human being. This is a regular human being that so many people are passing by and ignoring. And the fact is, this is a real person, you know? And just stopping long enough to be like, hey, like, whether you can even remember that I existed after this or not, I don't know, but, like, trying to show that love to them of, like, you are seen and you have value. And that this value isn't just the fact that you're a human, because that's kind of humanism. The fact that it's come from the fact that you're made in the image of God. And so that is where your value comes from. And so, yeah, that was a big thing. I think another big story, too, is a lot of people were barefoot. I don't really know exactly the reasoning behind that, but a lot of people were barefoot. And I remember this one lady, she was not high because she actually talked to us a little bit, but she walked over to our cart to get some snacks, and she was walking back to her tent, and there's trash all over the street. There's little pieces of aluminum foil all over the street because that's what people used to smoke their fentanyl in. And so there was like an open like trash container like that had food in it, and she was walking back to her tent and her bare feet, and just walked through the open food container with her bare feet, and didn't even wince, didn't even look down. And it's like, that is one of the most eye-opening things, is that this is so much of your atmosphere, so much of your environment, that you're not even thinking, oh, I should avoid this trash with my bare feet. You're just like, oh, I'm happy I got a snack and I'm walking back to my tent. Like, you're not even thinking about it. That's insane. That's crazy.
And everybody there just received you guys with open arms? And
no, definitely not. I mean, most people were happy to see us because we were taking the time to talk with them and pray with them and give them a snack or water or something. But sometimes people were not happy. Like, I remember there was one guy I tried to talk to, and he was not having a good day for whatever reason, and threw a water bottle at my head. And I ducked, and I was fine. And I was just like, well, moving on to the next person before something worse happens. You know? And then I had an intern, and then the intern at the Denver Dream Center, we were in a group together, and we were trying to talk to this guy about God and just ask him questions like, hey, like, what do you believe about God? What do you believe about Christians, you know? And he was not happy, like, wanted nothing to do with us. And I'll spare you the word, but he used a very bad word, and he called us blanking Christians, blanking losers for being Christians, and then just walked off. And we're like, okay, you know, like, that's just the fact, and that's reality, right? That's reality, is we're not promised that people are going to be happy to hear about God. Like, the Gospels, Jesus actually promises in the Gospels that he is going, that we're going to have persecution, that we're going to have some sort of pushback. Like, people aren't going to always like the truth, but it's the truth all the same. And so, just having that experience was very different from what I'd had before, so.
I've noticed that we're not seeing any pictures of tent cities.
Yeah.
I see some of you guys painting, but why aren't there pictures?
Yeah, so we did not take any pictures in the homeless camps, just because they have a lot of organizations that do come in, but for a lot of people, it's just to check off a good deed. They come in and they're like, oh, I did my good service thing, and I'm going to take a picture so everybody can see that I did my good service thing. And so that's a picture at the Denver Dream Center right there, but that's just students in their warehouse. So we did not take pictures in the homeless tent camps because we did not want it to feel like we were commercializing them or trying to use them. We were there to build relationships with them and care for them, and so we did not want to try and take pictures with them because that would be rude. Yeah.
All right, Eli, how about your how did you guys serve? What are some experiences? How did those things go for you?
Yeah, ours was a lot of, like, construction. Like Adeline had said earlier, like, hers was an urban adventure site. Mine was a mission ready, so that's kind of more of like the just building things, I guess. And a little more, I guess it's a step up for youth groups. And so a lot of the work we did is we built 16 raised garden beds across the summer. And the whole focus on that was to build these raised garden beds for the community garden, to put them in high schools and middle schools so that students have an outlet during school, a place to go, to work with their hands, to learn how to garden and, like, learn what good food is, right? And also, like, the bigger scheme, according to the guy who ran the community garden, his name was Gianni, he said was to kind of help defeat racism. So he wanted, like, to get everyone to work together, right? So, like, African-American kids, white kids, like, everyone working in the garden together. So we did a lot of that. We built a fence for a lady who she had about, I think there was 10 people in her house, really small home. Dad was in prison, like that sort of thing. Couple sick kids, they were in and out of the hospital every single week. I don't remember what they had, but it was just one of those things that wasn't going to be fixed. And so they had a fence in their backyard, and people would jump it all the time. It was destroyed, so they could jump it. They could go through where it was broken, right? And they would just squat in their backyard, smoke, do other things, whatever. You know, there was a lot of trash back there that we had to take care of, and then we built a new fence. So that was one of the things we did. And then also we got to help with the gardening at the community garden. One of our groups I think harvested 672 pounds within an hour, which was cool. And then what they did is after they harvested it, they packaged it, and then Gianni loaded it up on his bus and took it right into the community. So that was cool for them to see, like, their work really matters, and the need was so large that he was like, the food we had just, like, the stuff we had just harvested was already going out into the community. It wasn't like they didn't have a stockpile somewhere, right? As soon as it was ready, they took it straight out to the community. So,
didn't you tell me that you had one group that was so wealthy that one student had never even washed the dish before?
Yeah, we had our first group came in. They were all, the youth pastor told me, he was like, everyone on this trip, their parents are multimillionaires. Fun fact, he was also a multimillionaire.
A youth pastor, a multimillionaire.
He owned his own.
What do you think about that, Matt?
He owned his own business. Yeah, it was an interesting time, but they were, yeah, super wealthy. It was like the richest kid on the trip. He had never washed dishes before. And I was like,
how did they
crazy.
Do with getting their hands in the dirt and stuff?
They weren't huge fans of it. I remember when they first got there, a student came up to me and he was like, are we showering tonight? And I was like, no. And he goes, oh, I see what's happening here. And I said, oh, what do you see? And so, and they did not shower, for the record,
yeah.
Which was, I had a lot of fun that week, though. It was a hard week, but I remember they were actually the group that harvested the 672 pounds.
Wow.
It was a pretty large group.
Wow.
But while they were there, they were moving pretty slow after that, kind of taking their time weeding. No one wanted to weed. And I remember Gianni, the woman underneath him, came up to me, and she was like, hey, our sprinklers are about to come on. Like, they need to finish this now. And I was like, no, it's all right. I said, we'll let it go. So they flipped on. They're getting all wet, right? And she was like, ah, and then some other guy underneath Gianni turns it off. And I was like, turn it back on. I was like, this is good for them. This is what they need. So he flipped it back on, and they were all soaked, everyone but me. You know, just overseeing things and all that good stuff. But anyway, it was good for them to experience that as very wealthy kids. But
that's really cool. Yeah. So last year you guys were serving, but you were interns because you were in two different sites. You were in Kentucky and you were in Atlanta, Georgia area, and you were interns. So, but this year you had a leader over you. This year you guys were leaders and you had interns. You had two interns at one time, and you had an intern, and your job is kind of different. So tell us about that. What was it like being the buck stops here? I'm the leader of this thing. I got to set things up. What was that like?
I think it was a really, really great opportunity. I definitely saw myself grow a lot over the summer due to that. But I think really one of the biggest like differences between the intern and the trip leader, it was kind of the paperwork, honestly. Like, there was a lot of paperwork and stuff that needed to get done, and a lot of, like, financing and budgeting and that sort of thing. And so it was kind of cool to get to do all that background work, but at the same time, like, mentor two interns and, like, make the phone calls to set up, like, work projects and, like, make sure that your week is, like, put together, which oftentimes, I remember our week seven, everything fell apart completely. I remember my boss had texted me the night before the group was going to come in, because this group wanted, instead of, I think it's 4 days of EBS, they wanted five, and they wanted, like, they didn't want any adventure day, they wanted to work the whole time. So he texted me and was like, hey, you got everything set up? I'm like, yeah, we're good to go. And then everything fell through. And so having that responsibility on your shoulders of like making those split second decisions too, and I have to figure this out. And it does stop with me, right? Like, I'm the one making the phone calls. I'm the one, like, sorting things out. But it was a really good growth experience for me, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, similar story in the sense of it was definitely growing. I think it was definitely challenging at times, just, like, having an intern, because the summer before, I had been an intern for about half the summer and then ended up co-trip leading with another intern. And so, both of us interns, like, the summer before, kind of just, like, did our best and weren't exactly sure what we were doing, but we made it through. But, so actually having an intern and knowing, like, how to train them and like kind of have someone under me, that was kind of uncomfortable for me because I like just kind of like being friends with people, you know? And so that, I mean, we're definitely friends, but like it was challenging to know like how to be like, okay, you can't do that or you need to do this. Like that was challenging. I think the confrontation piece was a little difficult, but it was good. It was growing because that's just life. You need to confront people sometimes, so. But I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the organization and administration part. Like, I like having things organized, so I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah. So tell us about, I mean, how many hours you guys work? And you get up 11 in the morning or something?
No.
You're, you know, go to bed when you want? Or
we were actually on a Zoom call with some of our LeaderTrex friends last night.
Yeah.
And one of the guys made a joke about it being 90 hours a week. And it's not quite 90, but I would argue that it's relatively close.
It's close. Yeah.
Because you got to be up around 5:30 to do breakfast prep, and then depending on what you got going on at your site, bedtime is subjective. I know for me, oftentimes it was 11:30 or later. So
yeah. So they have a group that comes in on Sunday afternoon or evening, and then they're on the whole time. Until Saturday, that group leaves, and then so Saturday afternoon, you think, oh, that's their time off. It's not. So Saturday, you got to make sure the whole place is ready for the next group. You got to go do your shopping for a group of, you know, probably between, 15 to 30 students, sometimes $1,000 of groceries, and have that all ready. And so then you might have a little time on Saturday. You do your laundry. And then Sunday, you go to worship in the church that you're at, and then by that afternoon, evening, the next group's in. And it runs that way for 9 weeks without a break and without a stop. And I know that a common thing, if they were calling to check in at home, you say, how are you doing? Oh, I'm just so tired. That was kind of a common answer. But it was a good tired, right?
Yeah, it's worth it. Good it's tired. 100% worth it.
Yeah, really good tired. What's some of the greatest challenges that you've faced, work site, with your group, personalities, whatever they would be, and how did God get you through that?
I'm gonna think about this for a second. I feel like there's quite a few things. I feel like I learned a lot of hard lessons about myself over the summer. Like, for example, how much I disliked confrontation. You know, like, I feel like it was a really good summer, but it was difficult. It was, but hard is not bad. So, I think one of the biggest challenges was kind of that of just learning of like, okay, this is how I operate, this is how I communicate, and this is how, because another huge aspect of leadership is communication. And so learning like, this is how I communicate with different personality styles, different leadership styles, like, one of the people at one of the organizations we worked at was a very type B person, and I'm a very type A person. And that was so frustrating to me at first. But then learning, like, okay, this is where his heart is at. This is where his passion is at. And learning how to communicate with him and be like, okay, everything does not have to be organized. Would I run this differently? Yes. But it's not me. You know, I need to have humility in this. And so I think those were some of the challenges for sure. Obviously, just working through. I don't know, you're just pouring out so much. You know, it's all the time you're looking for ways to have conversations with students and just getting to know them and pointing them to God. And so that's fantastic. Like, that's the way that we need to be living as Christians.
Yeah.
But it is challenging, you know.
Yeah.
And so you're pouring out so much. And so that was definitely difficult. But God always provided what we needed, whether it was a conversation with my boss or calling home or reading something in the Word in my devos, like God always provided what I needed when I needed it, even though it was hard.
Yeah, I would say conflict too. I mean, there was definitely a lot of conflict that went on at our site. A lot of things that needed to kind of be straightened out with some worksite partners and such. We had one worksite partner who we were kind of butting heads the whole summer, honestly. His vision was to have us working on the church campus and helping out with our church, with their church. But I was like, the whole mission is to be out in the community and helping in the community. Like, that's the whole.
Not to go stay at a church and do work for
exactly,
them.
Right. Not to go stay at a church. And, like, youth groups aren't coming to work at a church when they can work at their church at home. Granted, like, you want to help churches out for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But there's such a need in the community. And so that was a big thing for us. It's like, all summer long, all 9 weeks, we were butting heads. About week five, my boss was finally like, all right, I'm coming down. So she came down, attempted to kind of, how do I want to, diffuse the situation there. Attempted to kind of diffuse the situation, and it worked for the most part until week nine. One of the last things he said to me was, in essence, he told me that the problem was not solved. So that was a big thing for me, is just learning conflict and being able to keep a cool head if I was being, like, yelled at. Like, okay, like, just relax and try to be the diplomatic one here. So.
Yeah. So if you put two and two together here, Eli told us earlier that Poly Zion is the original site. So this site's been going on for a long time. And what's happened at that site over a long time is that the church has begun to think it's about groups coming in to do projects for them. And some of the leaders have just kind of, oh, okay, and run with that. And so Eli had to kind of work as a change agent to get that church back on mission, to realize this is about, you host us, but this is about going out into the community. And so that brought a lot of challenge.
Yeah, I think especially post-COVID, like the last couple, like, staff on site there, it was just easier to just kind of roll with it, you know.
Yeah.
Especially that the person that was there last year didn't have an intern, and so she was kind of like...
Oh, she's by herself.
She was by herself, and so it was just easier to just kind of...
Yeah, and she's a strong leader.
She's a great leader, so...
Yeah. Well, I think one of the questions that probably most people would like to know the most, as we're getting ready to wrap up here pretty soon, but is what about student impact? How do you see students impacted, or is there a story of a student that just... really stands out that you know how they were impacted for Christ?
Yeah, I think more than maybe a specific student, it's more of like a general overall themes that I can think of for students. But one of the huge ones was getting into the Word, was reading the Bible. And so I think I kind of said this earlier, but like a lot of students, a lot of people in general don't know how to read the Bible. Like they read it and they're just kind of like, I don't know what to do with this. This is confusing. Yeah. This is hard. And so having those Bible study methods was such a huge thing for students. Like they reading that and then talking about it during team time, a lot of students realize like I can read the Bible, and I can not only just read it, but I can understand it, and I can see how this actually matters for my life. And so I think that was one of the hugest things, where so many students at the end of their trips, their two biggest things that they wanted to do when they got home was they wanted to read the Bible when they got home, and they wanted to actually step out and talk to people and pray for them, which was a big thing too, because at the beginning of the week, when we had like, you know, we did street team, for example, students were terrified to do that, which is understandable. That's a big step. And so they were so scared to go out into the streets. And by the end of the week, we had one group that were like, Fridays is usually a fun day. And they're like, we're not going to do our fun day. We're going to go out onto the streets of Denver again by just our group without the Dream Center. And we're going to hand out these bags that we've made and talk to people and pray with them. And they did it. And so that was one of the biggest things, was students were walking away wanting to continue. And that's the biggest thing, right? It's not necessarily about those huge moments. It's about that faith, the faithfulness and the consistency. It's about recognizing, like, I want to keep walking with God, and I don't want to just walk with him and know about him, but I want to know him, and I want other people to know him.
Awesome.
Yeah, man, it's hard to nail down one story. Like, I had one for the 8:30, but now the more I think about it, the more I'm like, oh, there's just more stories are coming to mind. So I'm going to share a different one. But it was our week two. We had a group of, it was our biggest group come in. It was like 31 people all together. And when they got there, one of the questions I asked the adult leaders is like, what do you want to get out of this trip? And they were like, we feel like our students need confession. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. Like, let's pray for it, right? So we were praying for it the whole week. Like, we took time out of the day to specifically be praying. And then I think it was about Wednesday, like, things were looking really good. Like, the group was doing so well. It was like we were on the brink of something great, right? And then one of the students got, like, really sick, and like to the point where she had to go to the hospital, right? And so all of her fellow students witnessed that. She got dismissed, and then Thursday it happens again, this time worse. Like, the squad has to come in and come get her out, right? Like, it was bad. And the students were just, like, distraught because, you know, there were rumors going around, right, as it does with kids, and, like, they were all extremely scared and all that stuff. And I remember going up to the youth pastor for the last night, and I was like, so how do you want to go about this? I was like, how do you want to go about team time? I said, because your students are, like, beat, right? She had gone home, like, so she wasn't even there anymore, that student. And he was like, let's just run with it. Like, let's just do it as we have done it and see what happens. I was like, okay. And so he gets on the piano, and he starts playing Gratitude, the song we just sang. Mm. And that song changed my summer. I actually learned to play it on the piano myself, and I played it for every single week after that and told the story of this group. Mm. But he was playing that song, and they were all just singing Gratitude, and they were grateful for the week and the challenges. And at the end, just typical team time, and we were like, well, I guess that's that. And a student got up, and she was like, hold on, I want to tell my team something. And so she got up and she confessed, and that was followed with 15 other students out of the 31 getting up and confessing, and like confessing to their fellow students. And it was just incredible to witness, because for me, I had pretty much cashed it in. At least that goal, I was like, these students are done. Like, where do you even go from here? Right? And just the simple song of gratitude just rocked them to the core, rocked me to the core. And just seeing, we had one student, I remember in specific, he'd had like a really hard life. He'd shared some with me, and he was in just a really rough spot, and he got up twice that night to talk. And that was just so cool to be like, of all students out of the 16, like, you would think he would be one of them that didn't, you know. Yeah. If you'd asked me Monday that he would have done it, I'd be like, no way. Like, this kid is like, he's tough. So that was just a really cool experience to see how they were impacted.
So when you're saying confessing, you're talking like confessing sin and stuff like that?
Yeah, confessing sins, confessing just the whole array of things.
And when you met with the leader to start with, that was his goal. So you guys didn't make plans for it. You just prayed about it.
Yeah, that's all we did, was pray about it. And so one thing, so we were praying about it every single night, right? And then once the student got sick, I felt God say to me, you guys need to be praying twice a day. Like, you need to be taking time during Devos while the students are away to get together and pray about it. I was like, okay. So we started getting together like 5-10 minutes during Devos, just praying for confession and for their students. So
prayer matters. Prayer really matters. Yeah. You know, you said you were going to skip the other story, but can you give us a cliff note of it? Because it's pretty powerful, too.
Yeah. So it was week 9. This was my group that didn't know Christ. This was a one where I tried to kind of share with them, and the adult leaders weren't thrilled about it. And one of the students, they were on one of my trips in Kentucky the year before. So I already knew them relatively well, and this student and I had connected pretty well the year before. He came up to me, and he was crying, and he was like, I'm really struggling with like anger and hatred towards people. And so he was crying, but it was also like a bitter anger, like tears, right? I mean, and so I was like, well, we got like one shot at this, right? And so I was like, basically share the gospel with him, broke it down. We talked for an hour at least, and I told him, like, this applies for all of us. Like, we all have a heart of stone before we're Christians. Like, I think of Pharaoh, like a hardened heart. We all have a heart of stone, but God can replace that with like a heart of flesh. And so once the student heard that, his tears started to change to like tears of joy. And he accepted Jesus that night. And just like the change on his face was indescribable. Went from like anger and tears to like to joy and tears, and just like, this is real. He was finally experiencing like a relationship with Jesus when he didn't even know that was a thing.
That's awesome. That should bring some goosebumps, right? That's incredible stuff right there. Well, guys, we're already really pushing our limits on time, and we don't want anybody to walk out on us or fall asleep on us. So just answer this pretty quickly, because it's important that we leave them with this. What would you like to say to your church family in gratitude for them, both in how they've prayed for you and financially supported you 2 years to do God's work like this, and also what challenge would you like to leave them with?
I mean, just a huge thank you. Like, thank you so much for your support financially. Thank you so much for your support in prayers, because we couldn't have done any of this, seriously. We could not have done any of this without, because this was our summer job. And so we couldn't have done this without you. And so your guys' support through financial and money and prayers and stuff like that is like that you guys had that hand in the mission. And so we're thankful so much for your prayers too, because there were so many moments where, you know, it's lunchtime and you're exhausted, or you're going to have this conversation with somebody and it's going to be hard and you need the wisdom of God, and only God can do that. And so we want to thank you so much for your prayers too, because we could not have done it without you guys. So thank you so much.
Yeah, just we thank you guys a lot, like she said. And just like the prayers, really, we are so grateful for those, because I know for me, by week 4, I was already starting to experience maybe even like a level of burnout, and I was like, oh no. And so like your prayers really, you know, God heard those and gave us strength and helped us push through. So thank you guys so much. And just like, I want to encourage you to look for ways to be on mission in your day-to-day life, you know, whether that's at college, at school, whether that's in the workplace, if that's at home with your family, wherever it is, look for a way to serve and be on mission. Because it's not just for the mission of those people, but it's for the mission of your heart as well. Because there's something that happens in you when you fulfill the Great Commission, and when you're on mission, you start to change as well. So keep that in mind as you guys look to kind of serve.
And we even ask you guys to just continue to pray for the students that came on these trips, for the students who did know God, for the students that didn't, and for the people we served. And also to just pray for yourselves, like ask God to give you those opportunities, because they're all around us. We have unbelieving family, unbelieving friends, unbelieving coworkers. People are all around us. And whether they're a believer or not, people need hope. And that hope is ultimately found in the gospel of Jesus Christ. We need to be sharing the gospel with unbelievers, but we need to be reminded of the gospel ourselves. And so just look for those opportunities to reach out to people. And even just asking, how can I pray for you? Because that's a huge open door right there.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. We really appreciate sharing that. And friends, as I said before, out of service flows gratitude. And I just want to share a couple scripture verses, then we're going to worship together as we close in gratitude. First from Romans 12:1, that says, therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Worship is offering ourselves to God. It's not Sunday morning alone. It's not just music done with music. Worship is offering ourselves to God in service, like these guys were able to do all summer, like many of you are able to do in your lives. And so when we see it that way, I think it helps us to think more of the gratitude side of why we serve. We're serving because we love God and because he made us to do it. And if we're not serving in some way, I think what we often find is kind of an empty spot in our lives. Because God made us to be doing things, to serve him and to serve others and to love him and to make him known to others. And when we box our faith into a Sunday morning worship that doesn't include what we do Monday through Saturday and how we love and serve others, what we have is a really small religion. Not even a small relationship. Because a relationship, when you have a relationship with somebody, even God, you spend time with them, like they teach the students to do, and you serve him, and you serve others, and it brings you the most gratitude of life. And then this psalm, just to put our hearts in a place to worship, which we'll do in a moment, Psalm 100 says, shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth. Worship the Lord with gladness. Come before him with joyful songs. Know that the Lord is God. It is he who made us. And we are his. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name, for the Lord is good and his love endures forever. His faithfulness continues through all generations. Let's worship him as we close. Friends, go be blessed this week, and bless as many others as you can with your life. And next week, we'll begin in our new Christmas series. So we'll see you then. God bless. See you.